4 o'clock, and this is KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio. Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. Welcome to another Express Yourself. Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into another Express Yourself. On the left side of the Great Divide. Well, the 37th Annual Valley Visual Arts Show opened 3 weeks ago and will hang until February 17th. The Valley Visual Arts Show features 50 Roaring Fork artists and includes two- and three-dimensional works in a wide variety of media. And one of those artists is with us now, Kip Hubbard. Kip Hubbard has only recently focused on art. He picked up the pencil in 2011 and he hasn't stopped since. His Valley Visual piece, a Prismacolor pencil drawing called Spectacle, can also be found on his website, kiphubbard.com. Kip joins Express Yourself today in person. Welcome, Kip.
Well, thanks, Luke. I'm really, really happy to be here.
In one of your artist statements that I came across, you say, "For me, drawing is an utterly selfish experience." What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't do it with anybody else. And when I'm doing it, I get to do whatever I want. And that's what I really love about it. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's interesting because, especially at the opening of the Valley Visual, a friend of mine said, "Would you walk me over to your piece and show me your piece?" And I said, "Sure," knowing that he was going to ask me what it meant. And I said, "I have no idea. You know, that's up to you." So it's selfish in the sense that I find my artwork or my process to be pretty selfish because I can get really, really kind of deeply into it for a long period of time and in long stretches. And it takes me a really long time to develop a piece and get it to a place where I think it's, you know, worthy of putting out in the world. So it's selfish in that way because I like spending a lot of time doing it.
Uh-huh. How much time do you spend on each piece, more or less? Average.
A lot.
Too much.
Well,
too much? Never enough.
Never enough. Uh-huh. Well, no, not for each piece, but never enough for creating. Each piece gets to a place where it's like, yeah, I intuitively hope to end when it's time to end. You know, lift the pencil up and put it down for the last time. It's hard to know when that happens. But specifically, it depends on the piece. But I have a piece at home, a large 28 by 40 pencil drawing. A colored pencil that took me 40 or 50 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes a long time because first I draw it in graphite and that's usually on a sketch pad. And then if I like it, I'll take it over to my man. Shout out to Sean Toll over at Soper's Printing, who's awesome. He used to be on Main Street at Marty's Gallery.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And Sean's got his own thing going now, and he does great work. So he will scan it and enlarge it and then print it on, you know, on good paper, usually like a Sunset hot press rag. And then I take it home and I start working it with the colored pencils. And that takes a really long time because it has to kind of evolve in its own, you know, in its own time.
Well, it sounds like you're very open to letting that evolve and let it emerge, the subject matter. But I wonder, as you're going into a drawing, whether there are certain technical aspects that you have forefront in mind that you want to explore this time.
In the past, not so much. But it's interesting. I brought my daughter Bray with me. She's 13 and she goes to the Waldorf School. And we have been exploring some. My sister is a great fine artist living in Florida, and she sent me a book about pencil drawing. And, you know, Bray and I sit there and look through the book, and we're like, "Oh, wow, that's really cool, man. We can learn about burnishing, or we can learn about, you know, using paint thinner to, you know, to manipulate the wax pencil, you know, and things like that." And so the process has become more exploratory, but really, I mean, I've only been drawing for, I'm going on 6 years, and I feel like I'm really a student of it. And so I'm just learning how to, first of all, manipulate the graphite around the paper in ways that I like. And so a lot of the more refined techniques of that you find in books or with instruction or whatever are still yet to be explored for me, which is cool. I mean, I'm ready to do the next 30 years with it, you know?
So the sky's the limit as far as discovery.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. And I actually wrote recently in an artist statement that, you know, I've toyed with the idea of really dig, and I've done a little bit, but I've toyed with the idea of doing three-dimensional art, specifically large sculpture. I really enjoy that. I think it's really exciting, but there's so much to learn in this particular medium that I'm working in. And I'm a fan of learning how to master something. I just like that idea. And so that's the journey for right now, is just keep digging in, you know, keep trying to find new ways to express whatever it is is in this crazy brain.
It seems like it's a natural evolution from drawing to painting. Do you foresee painting happening for you?
Well, I think Bray could actually answer that better, because she made a transition between painting and or drawing and painting, you know, much more seamlessly. I mean, I've really only done a couple of pieces, acrylic pieces, and it was really fun. There are challenges there that I'm not familiar with, and I would need probably a teacher. But Bray seems to have taken it on. What do you think about that in terms of, you know, using pencil versus, you know, painting?
I think that using pencil first did help me start painting. I think when I started painting after drawing, I was very familiar with kind of just the way it moves and, you know, what typically looks good. It's a lot of similar to shading with pencils. Mm. I think.
Well, looking at your drawings, Kip, on your website, lots of detail, very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
Does that reflect a philosophical stance? Is it purely observational? You're seeing all this detail. Mm. Where does that come from?
Wow, this is a great question. I don't know. I truly don't know where it comes from specifically. I do know that I really enjoy fine detail. The really cool thing about going through the process that I go through with, from graphite to enlarging to color, and then scanning the color, which I do, by the way, up at Basalt Printing, they have a roller scanner up there. So for my large pieces, which are like 17 by 22 sheet fed, you know, paper that Sean prints on, when you take that back down, you know, if you do a 600 DPI scan and you shrink it back down to, you know, 8x10, the detail goes bonkers. It's awesome. You know, it's really cool. So I love that idea, but I also really somehow enjoy in the meditative process getting into a lot of fine detail, because, and this goes to kind of why I do my art. And that is that I don't do my art for any real external purpose. I really do my art for my own therapy. In other words, like, you know, if I'm really trying to work down something that's going on, you know, in my mind, or, you know, in our world, you know, or whatever, and I sit down to draw, the more I delve into it, the more I'm able to process. It's really interesting, and it's really healing for me. So really the process, I mean, if I never showed a piece of art, the process would be phenomenal. And getting into an art show like Valley Visual, which is so phenomenal, having, you know, having CCAH here in this community, has been just that extra bonus of being out there and sharing my art with others, and also being part of the artist collective here, where we get to chit chat with each other and learn about each other's work and techniques and things like that. So really mostly what I'm doing is I'm doing this again, it's selfish. I'm doing it for me. And So I don't know if that answers your question.
I think it does. You know, in that artist statement, I think I remember you saying that it's meditative, like you just said, and it brings you benefits in ways that normal meditation doesn't. That's interesting to me.
Well, you know, so that's a really great point. It's not that for me, normal meditation doesn't. I have not mastered meditative practice. For some reason, I don't know why, but it's been difficult for me to sit. This is my way of being able to sit and allow the energy to kind of flow through. But I'm focused on something. I guess you could say there is chatter going on in my head, but it's the good chatter that I'm filtering. I'm not filtering, but I'm working through it. And in that sense, I probably need to, or not need to, but it would probably be fun to explore traditional meditation practices to see if I end up with the same result, you know?
Well, I think I remember one drawing on your website called Pop Up. I don't remember the date on that one, but maybe you do.
A couple of years ago. That was like 2015.
Okay. And a lot of these drawings are distinguished by the top third of your head is gone, and sprouting out of your head are all of these amazing, fantastical things. In Pop-Up, very busy, lots of color, very busy. The one that's hanging at the Valley Visual Show, Spectacle, little bit more sedate, and I wonder if what we're seeing there is that evolution of the meditative aspect really coming through.
I'll give you the $90 when we're done with the session. That was brilliant, man. I mean, I never would have come up with that one. That was great. I really think you're onto something there. I mean, I would have to think that through, but you're right. Pop-Up was pretty frenetic.
Yeah.
And there was a lot going on. And I do a lot of pen and ink drawing as well. And the pen and ink is less forgiving, but it's more dramatic in the sense that the black really pops. And I really enjoy that. I'm working on a pretty weird piece right now that'll be up on the website in a week or two. But when I started to delve into this idea of the skull being removed and, you know, what's kind of coming out of that, I have another piece on the website called Out of My Head, and it's a drawing of my younger daughter, Lily, with imagination coming out. So there's a dragon and there's a boat and there's a, you know, there's a rainbow and there are all these different things. And that was actually, someone asked me if I would, that was supposed to be a, it was supposed to be, I was asked to do that. It was supposed to be a commission. And I did the initial drawing and then they were like, no, that's not really what I had in mind. I said, well, I like it, so I'm going to keep going with it. So I did. So the stuff coming out of the head, there is probably some metaphor in there. And I have a deep obsession with eyes, as you may or may not have gleaned from a lot of my work.
Yes.
Eyes are fascinating to me. Uh-huh. And what's going on with eyes, you know.
I could imagine in Spectacle, the Valley Visual piece, that you spent a lot of time on those eyes.
Well, I usually start with the eyes.
You do?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I have a piece called Time, and that's on the website. That was at the Valley Visual last year, and the center of the drawing is an eye, and everything emanates from the eye. And so I think, you know, I guess if we're going to dig into this, you know, more intentionally, you know, with analysis, then it would be, that would be the, you know, the genesis of all those pieces are the eye, and what is coming from the eye. What is our vision? What are we looking at? What are we looking for? And that piece, Time, is very, it's got, it literally, I mean, there's an aspect of time about it. It's many planets moving backwards into the depths of the piece, and, you know, moons and
bubbles sort of signifying maybe a multiverse out there.
Yeah,
each universe bubbling up.
Yeah, there are bubbles. And that big piece that I told you about too, Out of the Ether, it's a bubbling out of a fissure, basically. And it's planets, but in a way it's kind of like, you know, is it planets? Is, you know, what is it? You know, kind of thing. So, I don't know. It's fun.
A lot of people in the Valley know you as a drummer.
Yeah.
At one point, not too long ago, you were the director of Aspen Film, executive director.
I was.
Have you cast all of that aside and jumped wholeheartedly into making art?
No. I haven't. I'm actually working at a great nonprofit right now. I've been a nonprofit guy for years. I actually created a nonprofit in Port Townsend, Washington, which I almost feel like is our sister city, because it's so much like Carbondale. But I had a long time great percussion program going on there. I've been pretty immersed in nonprofits for a long time, and I believe in service to others. And I'm now working at Raising a Reader based in Glenwood with Rick Blauvelt, who's an amazing guy. And I'm the associate director there. And we're basically doing early literacy programs for, immigrant underprivileged families, to help the kids get a kind of a leg up on oral and literacy in general.
Uh-huh.
Oral language skills and reading and family bonding. So that's kind of my day job. And art is, it's what I do when I have time to sit down at Bonfire, which I got to give a big shout out to, by the way, because so many of my pieces have started at Bonfire.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Tons of them.
That's cool.
And Charlie Chakos is a good man. These guys walk by me and look at those weird pieces and like, oh yeah, there he goes again, kind of thing. It's been really it's a great place to work.
It's those kinds of things that make an art community.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
A place to go, a place to exhibit like CCAH provides.
Yeah.
All those things add up to an arts community.
Oh, and this community is amazing. And I want to give a shout out to Amy Kimberly and everybody at CCAH. At the Launchpad and Dance Initiative and everything that's going on. And I will miss somebody here, unfortunately, because there's so much going on in terms of the creative, creative world. I want to say thank you to everybody, but I think Amy and her crew and their board have done an amazing job of just really putting us on the map and in so many ways. And Know Your Artist, Know Your Art, I think I say that properly, is one of the new initiatives at CCAH. Brian Colley, fabulous guy over there, an incredible artist, by the way. They're really developing this program of really bringing the art to the people and having people understand and know artists. And it's really fun, as is the Creative District. We're a Yes. Colorado Creative District. And that's going to reap incredible benefits over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
Well, Kip Hubbard, it's such a pleasure to meet you and to talk a little bit about your art. Thanks for joining the program.
Well, thank you so much, Luke. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And Bray, same to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe next time we'll be talking about your art. Stay with us. More to come on today's Express Yourself.
It's 4:21, and better late than never.
Well, just about exactly 3 years ago, the Roaring Fork Valley was shocked to learn of the death of Stuart Oxenhorn. Stuart was a longtime entertainment writer for the Aspen Times. He was also a father, a husband, and a friend to many around the valley, including its musicians, and he is still mourned and missed. To commemorate Stuart's life, there's a concert tomorrow night at the Wheeler Opera House. The concert for Stewie starts at 8 p.m. And with us now by telephone on Express Yourself is Josh Berman of Mountain Groove Productions. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Luke. How are you? You kind of hesitated there.
I know. I lost my way, Chalk it up to age.
No problem.
Sort of
how
that,
are you?
Good, thanks. Sort of that deer in the headlights feeling.
I understand.
Well, tell me about the show. Lots of great musicians on stage tomorrow night at the Wheeler. Who?
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate that we have so many great musicians in this valley, throughout the Roaring Fork Valley. Well, tomorrow night, we corralled 30 of them, and it is going to be one special evening. We're going to have Brothers Keeper as the house band. It's basically similar to like The Last Waltz. If you remember The Last Waltz, which with the band coming as sort of, hosting all these musicians that came on and off stage, Dr. John and Joni Mitchell and blah, blah, blah. Well, we're doing a very similar concept as a tribute to Stewie and the music of the Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan. And we put together a beautiful set list of Dead and Dylan songs. Brothers Keeper will work as a house band. Musicians will come on and off the stage. Brothers Keeper will open the evening with Bertha. It kind of rolls out like a Dead show. Just I tried to follow the format of the archives of the Grateful Dead when the Dead did tour with Dylan, and I'm trying to kind of follow that format and try to put together songs in as best order as if it was really a Dead Dylan show. Like Bobby Mason is doing She Belongs to Me and I Know You Ride Her. Joe Kelly is doing I'll Be Your Baby Tonight. Aspen 440 is doing All Along the Watchtower. Dan Sheridan is doing Friends of the Devil. Suzanne Paris, Tangled Up in Blue.
Ooh.
I mean, Vid is doing Watching the River Flow. Bo is doing Highway 61. Steve Postel flew in from California, and he's doing Don't Think Twice. It's Sport Favor is doing Midnight Moonlight. It's just going to be so terrific.
And you're focusing on the Dead and Dylan because, of course, those were two of the favorite bands of Stewie.
That is correct. I mean, I think anyone that knew Stewie knew very well that he was a total Deadhead. And, our friendship was, we spent so much time talking about the Grateful Dead. One of his favorite songs that he loved to play was Visions of Johanna. He took great pride in being able to play that song. We always spent a ton of time talking about the Dead. You know, he even wrote articles about my Dead tours. You know, he loved my stories of when I toured with the Dead, when I went on Dead tour. Uh-huh. And, he would often write about that. He was anyone that had an opportunity to meet him, if they could bridge that immediately and talk about the Dead, you were an immediate friend.
Well, not only did he focus on the Grateful Dead like that, but he also focused really heavily on local musicians. And he was, I would have to say, one of the champions of local music in this valley for a long time.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for bringing that up, because that's completely true. And that's really what this is about tomorrow night. All the, what he had for 20 years, the way he supported our music scene in general and the local musicians within our valley. And that's why these musicians were so enthusiastic about getting together tomorrow night and doing this. I mean, just today, just get the excitement and the adrenaline that's coming through right now, just speaking to everybody, it's just amazing that they can do this and do it really to honor him. And that's really what it's about. And of course, everyone is excited about being with one another. And, this has never been done before. Get 30 musicians together at the Wheeler never has been done, ever has been done. So it's a first in a lifetime thing, because we hope to do it year in and year out. So this will be the first of many to come. And it's going to be a wonderful celebration.
Josh, I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you so much. Tickets available at Wheeler Opera House and online, Aspen Show Tix.
Aspen Show Tix, yes.
Okay, great. Hey, thanks for joining us and telling us all about it.
Luke, I always appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
We'll talk again soon about Palisade.
Thank you.
Okay. Stay with us. It is 4:27. More to come right after this. Well, focusing on another, actually two, of the Valley Visual Show artists, mother and daughter tandem Sue and Caitlin Crabiel. I caught up with them yesterday here at KDNK, and here's what they had to say about life and about art. Well, joining the program now are a mother and daughter artist team, perhaps the first time on Express Yourself.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Sue Crabiel, welcome to KDNK.
Thank you.
Good to have you back.
Great to be here.
And Caitlin Crabiel is here, too. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Welcome to KDNK.
Thanks.
So, like mother, like daughter, huh?
Bits and parts, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. As much as I try not to be, I guess so.
Exactly.
Well, you know, in another 30 years, you'll go, oh, I'm my mother after all. That's yep. the way it works, yep. Isn't it?
Yep. Walk around. And I'll make little like noises, and she's like, "You sound like grandma." I'm like, "Oh no,"
because I sound like mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's the way it works. Well, aside from personal characteristics, did you inherit some artistic, or maybe an artistic way of looking at the world from your mother, Caitlin?
I think with my parents owning a frame shop and growing up around art, it was always around me, always there. But I actually didn't start out drawing or painting like my mom. I ended up like in clay and kind of doing my own thing and trying to find my own kind of way of art. I think that's why I probably am not a musician like my mom, is because I like kind of wanted to do my own thing. But I mean, I ended up being just as creative, I guess, as my parents.
Well, it was you, wasn't it, that sort of prodded your mother to get back into the visual arts? Because a lot of our listeners know your mother as a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, I started out in clay and got into high school and ended up not having time for clay. Didn't really, I don't know, just a lot of it was just too time-consuming. So I really got into visual art, which I think I understood the shapes and forms from clay and understanding how to make those forms 3D and put them into 2D. So I started doing that and got really interested in there's a figure drawing time that we go to over at CCAH, and I started doing it for about a year, and my mom had done figure drawing through college and she was an art teacher, so I was like, she's like, one day she's like, I should come with you. I'm like, yeah, why aren't you coming with me? Like, let's go together. And so now it's kind of the last few years been a thing of like we kind of go together, and it's a nice little time to unwind and sit down for 2 hours and make yourself do something without any distraction, which is really nice in this crazy world.
Well, art sort of serves that purpose, doesn't it? It sort of centers the mind and kind of helps you make sense of crazy things.
It's truly my meditation.
Is it?
I mean, I love the outcome, and I always, like, I want each piece I do, I want it to be better than the last one. But the time, like, even if I didn't have shows or whatever, I would still be painting, maybe not as much or as frantically, but still would be painting or drawing or something. Yeah.
So that need to make it better each time, what constitutes better? Talk about that.
For a long time, I really focused on the technical side. So just really trying to get portraits, figures, just look correct, be correct, be to the top, like just emulating paintings of what I'd seen and just wanting to be professional-ish, even though I have no base under me to be professional. But now I'm really realizing that just because I have a foundational skill, well, with a foundational skill, I have to do something with it that's interesting. And like, what am I trying to say with my art? What do I want to do with it? What do I want to be? And what is my statement, kind of thing? And I think that's really important as an artist.
So when you start a piece, a new piece, is your mindset on the technical things, or are you trying to teach yourself to, I don't know, kiss the muse as it flies by?
Yeah, I mean, before it was really just painting portraits of people was really my thing. And And of late, I've been spending a lot of time outside and running around in where we live. And as I'm realizing that I'm going to leave this place and go to college, I've understood how much I love these mountains. And so with my recent show, I've put a lot of portraits in front of portraits of my friends and loved ones kind of in front of these mountains that represent Colorado. All of my pieces in the bonfire right now are 14ers in Colorado, which I thought was kind of fun. And I had never never painted mountains before I started this show, but I don't know, I wanted to do, so I thought of what I wanted to put on the wood or the canvas or whatever, but then once I have the idea, then it's nice because I have a technical base now to be able to portray what I want, which is really convenient and fun because it's like it works and it's exciting. So
that is exciting. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, I went over to the bonfire today to take a look at all your pieces, and I was kind of shy to get up to some of them because they're right above people talking at the table.
Yeah, coffee shop.
Oh, excuse me. I just want to look at the art. But all the pieces are oil on plywood with resin.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you about that process a little bit. First of all, I noticed that it looks like you prepare the wood a little bit. You sand it? Do you sand it a little bit?
I started sanding some of them, but most of the wood is just reclaimed wood, plywood that I've cut off of like packaging boxes. Actually, one of them in there is an old door to like a cupboard, and it's old wood, and it's like got a cool feel, and I really like the wood texture. I was sanding a couple of them, and then I was like, this is taking me too much time. I don't care. So I just would paint oil. I'd usually like drum what I wanted to do, I had an idea. I'd do the mountain, and then I'd kind of look at where on the mountain like was the best spot to cover with a portrait. And then I would draw on top of that the portrait. And then from there, I'd usually do sections. So face, then the mountain, then fill in whatever needed to be filled in, kind of in that order.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And then the resin came last.
And it was actually really cool with the paintings because I did the mountains with palette knife, which made them kind of rough and different and kind of, I was trying to represent like really the strength of those mountains. But then I would do the face and the portrait really with soft brush strokes and just trying to like, I don't know, I'd show that these friends, these women who I put portraits of or whatever, are like the mountains, and their strength is maybe subtle, but they still are just as strong as the mountains is what I was trying to go for. But then with the resin on top of it, I don't know, I think we hold all these barriers in front of ourselves, and sometimes we won't let people in, but with the resin, I left it bubbly and kind of interesting because there's cracks that people can get into and they can see. And sometimes we let down our guards, I guess.
I'm reminded of that quote. I think it was Leonard Cohen. He said something like, I love the cracks because that's where the light comes through.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Oh, yeah. It is something like that.
Well, I noticed right away those resin coatings were not smooth.
No.
Lots of bubbles. Yeah. Not a smooth coating by any stretch. And I assume that must have been intended.
Yeah. I also just didn't want it to go all the way to the edge because I think, like, we have edges to ourselves and, like, that we will let people in, I guess. And I just like the rough texture. I like the rough texture of the mountain, the rough texture of the wood, the rough texture of the resin, but then trying to have this like soft, subtle kind of face and I guess womanly, romantic, I guess, in a way. But yeah, I've seen a lot of resin where it's always very smooth and all the way over and it's perfect, and I didn't want it to be perfect. Uh-huh.
Well, why even put resin on in the first place? What's the point of that?
I really, for one, it's just to finish a piece to make it look really finished, but it would bring out a lot of color that and depth that I think wasn't there in the first place. And it just gave it another dimension that was really interesting.
I was reminded of capturing a moment in amber.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at the resin, you know, it's you painted a moment and then you preserved it in the resin and it's there for eternity now,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think what's kind of funny is everybody would talk to me and they'd be like, "You're the framer's daughter. Why aren't these framed? Why aren't there glass?" And yes. Maybe that's that.
We
that
do
trying,
get a lot of grief about that.
Yeah, trying to get away
she's
from
a rebel.
That, yeah, that. I don't know. I don't always follow. Like, I think framing is beautiful, but I don't want it. I didn't want it to be pristine, and I wanted it to kind of be just stuck where it is. And it was also a way to make me stop painting because I wanted to keep painting. So once the resin was on, it was done, it was there, it was set. And I had to step back and let it go and let it be kind of how it is. So
this pairing of young, beautiful women and mountains was probably intended. Am I right?
Yeah.
Sort of linking wildness between the two? Am I too far off there?
No, that's exactly what I wanted to bring. All of the pictures are friends of mine or of me. And I think that we're in an age where, like, a lot of pictures of women are always these pretty beautiful pictures. And yes, of young women, these are also women that, like, surround me and inspire me in their strength. And I kind of wanted to show they're not smiling, they're not being cute. They're not just, like, happy. I wanted to kind of show their further emotions, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then pairing them with an animal or a dog was showing that, like, just another aspect of strength of, like, I'm guarded and I'm not this cute little girl that you can mess with, like... I'll bite back.
Hmm. See, last year you were chosen the People's Choice of the Valley Visual Show. Was it the same kind of piece that's in this show?
It was purely a portrait with resin on top.
Okay.
So
on plywood?
On plywood.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't a person I knew. It was a picture that I'd found, and I was really intrigued and wanted to bring something of my artistic nature to it. But I was really intrigued. She kind of looks out and is very, looks sorrowful, like, or just kind of angry, I guess, with her eyes. And I liked that because it was a little pretty girl again, but she had something more, and rather the strength that isn't just the little pretty flower. That can be plucked up, I guess.
And how did you portray that strength? Was it in the eyes? Was it in the gesture? Was it in the body language?
It was really the eyes. I think I've always been really drawn to eyes. Whenever I first started drawing, really in like eighth grade, I was always, you know, I would just do drawings of eyes. And I needed to step back because it would get overwhelming and then I wouldn't want to work on anything else. But, Her hair kind of fell over her face a little bit of, like, this kind of protection, as well as her shirt was bigger, but you could kind of see that she was hollowed out in her shoulders and kind of, like, backing, I guess, or, like, leaned forward, but then her eyes looked at you of, like, don't mess with me kind of thing. And with that resin on top of it, it really was another layer that I put in front of her, but that she could still get through. And I think that it represents a lot of how teenage girls kind of look at the world of, like, they're pretty little flowers, but there's a little more
mess
to them.
With me,
yeah.
Buster.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, that's what we love about the women for sure. Are you going to continue to study art, or are you going to, as a profession, do you want to pursue it?
It's really what lights my fire.
Huh.
I plan to go to Montana State University next year, and study art.
That's the one in Bozeman.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And hopefully Nordic ski for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just want to see how far I can get with art. Mm-hmm. I know from being around art and being growing up in a frame shop that it's hard. It's a really hard profession, but mm-hmm. I think I've realized that I want to go to college for learning rather than to get a job. And I just want to learn as much as I possibly can right now of just furthering my skills, because it really just makes me happy. Uh-huh. And doing what makes us feel alive.
That's so great, Kayla.
Yeah.
Sue Crabiel, how about that?
Well, I know. Who would have thought she'd be so articulate?
I would have.
I'm like, wow, I don't have that much depth in my art. I don't know.
No? You don't think so? I'll bet if you did it enough and for a long time.
Well, you know, I might be at the beginning of that. I might be at the beginning of doing the art again in my life. It sort of got... believe it or not, I sort of forgot about it. Isn't that funny? Huh. I sort of forgot that that's a huge part of me and makes me super happy. I hadn't done figure drawing in 35 years when she walked me into that figure drawing.
And what did you discover when you did it?
Oh, my goodness, I was home.
Huh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do it every Monday night, and it's tough to get from work to... you know, the workout in the afternoon and then run home and shovel food in and get to drawing. But I get there and it's just a great group of people that are like-minded, and it's not a class, it's a group. Anybody can go. And 6:30 to 9:30, and we get nude models. What an amazing thing to have in our town.
Hmm.
It's very unusual to have that opportunity.
Huh.
Yeah. It's just great.
You were an art teacher at one point.
I was.
So you forgot about that.
That's what I meant to do.
Oh, okay.
I was a high school art teacher for 4 years, right out of college in a private school outside of Boston. And I absolutely loved it. I was a teacher. I was a coach. I was in heaven. It was in a private school situation. But I was young and had very little social life within that. And that's what it was difficult for me after I got into the fourth year and realized this wasn't going anywhere socially for me. It was very good for married people and families, but not for a young single person. And so I decided to take a year off from teaching. I came out to Aspen, and I was taking a year just to ski. I'd never done anything like that. I went straight to college, straight to work for 4 years, and now it's time to have 1 year to play. And I worked at Aspen Highlands passing out trail maps and rolling sandwich meat for picnics. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? That's what I was doing. And I ruined my knee in a race course, ski racing in January, like so badly that it was 10 days in the hospital.
Ooh.
Yeah, reconstruction, two ligaments torn. It was nasty. And so I ended up staying to get back on the horse and to have that motivation to get better. And to get that reward, because I didn't get it. I didn't get to ski like I intended. And coincidentally, the economy was sort of tanked in Aspen, and my parents bought a condo, and I ended up moving into it. And I worked for Footloose Moccasin Makers.
Remember.
I know. That's how we... I made the custom moccasins for 7 years and skied every day. And I just had this great... I mean, why would I leave at that point? And then, I went back into picture framing when I realized I was getting too insulated again. You know, my social life sort of revolved around the partying ski racers on the weekend, and that wasn't healthy. And the workshop was so small, I didn't really know people. So I went back into picture framing, which was a family business that my parents started in the 70s when they were empty nesters. My mom ran it, and I just knew how to do it. So I went, oh, I'll do picture framing because I'll have interaction with people, because I really enjoy that the interaction and helping people design and all. And I ran a shop in Aspen for 7 years where I met Ken, Caitlin's father and my husband. And he is a great photographer and worked in the photo lab there for 9 years. And we got married, had Caitlin, and then had this opportunity 19 years ago this March to buy a frame shop down in Basalt. And we never would... It just was one of those things where somebody was saying, this is what you're meant to do, and this is where you should live. And so we bought that shop, and it just took off. And Ken became a very good framer, learned to be a framer rather than a photographer. And we've been able to build a house in Carbondale. And so that's how I became a picture framer. Now, having said that, I've always lived a creative life, and I always was a songwriter since I was a teenager. Closet songwriter, really wasn't a person that performed much. That wasn't my intention. I always made things. I do, you know, I take silversmithing. I do jewelry as well. I do all sorts of, I always make stuff, and I raised Caitlin to always make stuff. When she was a very young, we always did crafts projects. We always made things. We got that little Fimo clay. She'd make little teeny weeny teddy bears in little toaster oven.
When I was
epic
like
things when she was really little that were so weirdly perfect. It was weird. So we always had that culture, and I had that when I was growing up. I had that culture as well. And but as having a young child, you don't do artwork where you have to. I mean, to do artwork well, you need to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like jogging. If you're not doing it regularly, you never get anywhere. You're just, it always is difficult. And reaching a fresh piece of paper when you haven't drawn anything in months and having only 45 minutes or an hour and a half, you're just not warmed up. You can't do it. You can't relax. So I didn't do art projects. I played my guitar because I felt like I could do it interrupted with her growing up. And so then when she started getting interested in it, I would help her when she'd ask. I never sat down and taught her art. I won't claim that I did this, you know, but I was definitely there as a resource and gave her some insight on how to approach some drawings and how to fix things and how to figure out what's wrong and how to make things better and use her own tools to improve things. And it was such a joy for me that it got me sparked, you know. And she, like I said, she's really taken off in the last few years, and going and drawing with her was just amazing to do every Monday night. It was really, really fun. So here I am. So for this fall, I went, I'm going to draw something for the Valley Visual Show.
And it's called The Wishing Well.
Looking Down the Wishing Well,
Looking
I think.
Down the
yeah.
Wishing Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty funny.
Describe the piece. It's what, about 3 feet square?
Yeah, it might be it might be a little bit smaller than that. Framed size is probably something like that. But it's a circular picture. Uh-huh. The drawing itself is circular, and
pen and ink.
It's pen and ink.
Okay.
I love pen and ink. I'm an unusual drawer. Pen and ink is my love. I like to build up layers of lines to create the textures and the depth and the tones to give you three dimensions. And it's a throwback to when I was in college. My concentration art was printmaking, etching, and it was, I did it with little needle tools on metal to create prints, and that's how you would build up lines to create your three dimensions. So, and I love realism. I just really enjoy that. So I made this portrait. I have no idea where I got the idea, but I literally one evening I rallied my husband and my daughter, and they were like, what? And I go, I just need you for a minute. And now I just come here. And so I got this trash can, this big trash can from downstairs, and I put a headlamp and a self-timer camera and a dog biscuit down in the bottom of it. And I made everybody look into it from different sides and go, and some of them were not very successful. They were pretty funny. And the dog just kept thinking I was going to throw her in. She was freaking out.
She did not like it.
She did not like it. So I pieced together the different views of each person, and it's sort of an interesting family portrait.
Yes, it is.
It is.
You know, and it's going to be a family heirloom in your family, isn't it?
It is.
I can see that. It just captures a moment in time in your family so well.
I know. And honestly, I priced it high because I really, really didn't want anybody to buy it because I really want to keep it. Uh-huh. It just makes me laugh and smile. And each personality is so of them. I mean, my husband just has this grin on his face that is so him. It's just very funny. So it was really enjoyable.
Well, you know, I'm trying to picture how my face would look if I were looking through the wishing well.
Or looking down, too.
Yeah. And you know, I was trying to decide, well, I'm either going to be super surprised at what I see, or it's just going to be another day or another moment.
Well, a lot of us, when we look down, we aren't really that happy with how we're looking when we look down either. But
right.
It was just, it wasn't about looking any particular way. It was just kind of going, what's in there? Just kind of and particularly the dog is like, what are we doing? I have no idea why we're here. So It was a lot of fun. I'm really happy.
There's kind of a, I don't know how to describe it, a kind of peaceful curiosity.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it was anything earth-shattering, but you're all just kind of looking, and it's kind of interesting.
It could be something like, oh my goodness, there really is a wish in there.
Uh-huh. Or there's a troll that's ready to get you.
Or I can't quite tell what's in there. I'm not sure. Anyway, it was a lot of fun to do, and I'm very happy. And from here on out, I mean, now, you know, Caitlin, unfortunately for me, is going to be going away to college, and suddenly I'll have space in the house that isn't cluttered with all of her artwork. Our house is, my husband, he's very patient with all of the art and art supplies scattered through every room in our house. But who knows? I may pull paint back out. I used to oil paint. This was another lifetime ago, and I'm very excited to see how that may go for me.
How about that? Are you still writing songs?
Not as many, but I wrote one last weekend, inspired by the Pussy Hat Project.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
I'm just, you know,
millions of pink pussy hats all over the
I sent three of those out into the world.
Did you?
One of them was in Washington. One went to Washington, D.C., one went to Denver, and one went to Aspen. I was busy that day chasing Caitlin at a Nordic race, so I wasn't able to go to any of them, but I felt as though I participated.
Uh-huh.
And it was really cool to see how it really did take off, that the pink hats everywhere. I had no idea if it was really going to take off, but to really then see the photographs of them all over the place was pretty cool.
How did that look to you, Caitlin, as an 18-year-old woman?
It's definitely, I mean, I've never really felt in this valley especially that women were any lesser. But realizing as I've grown up of what is equality and what that means, it's a really amazing thing. And I mean, growing up in history class, I'd look to like the 70s and the 80s and just times of when people of unrest really and change and, I don't know, women's rights, gay rights, black rights, and realizing that I was kind of like, looking back at that, I really was just, oh, that's never, change isn't going to happen anymore. Like, that was such an influential time. But I'm realizing now that my life is an influential time, that we're going through riots. We still have places to go, and I want to work to help with that movement. So I don't know if I'm really quite there with political art, but maybe in my future I could do something like that.
Well, you know, you have to be careful with political art, don't you? Because it wouldn't stand the test of time necessarily, unless it has a lot of soul in it.
True, exactly. But then maybe it's iconic.
There you go.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, in unsettled times, my thinking is that art is a pretty valuable thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and unsettled times, by their very nature, inspire the great art. I mean, I have a tremendous community of singer-songwriters that I know because of the annual songwriting camp that's in Lyons every summer that I've been going to since 97. And I tell you, there are a ton of songs being posted now that are just really poignant and interesting and wonderful songs. You know, not necessarily anthem, whatever, but really moving. It does move people to create beautiful things from, you know, I mean, really super happy people usually write boring songs. It's going to be a great period of art, I'm sure. People are very moved.
Right now, really, instead of more political art, I am really focused on environmental because to me is the most important thing that's happening in my life right now. And what we all need to really work towards and making our world healthy, because I love our mountains and I love our rivers and our oceans, and I want to live in a place that's healthy and that provides me with a healthy body and a healthy mind and healthy children and healthy grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And so I think with the mountains in my pieces and whatnot, like, maybe it's another draw of just the, like, it's just a beautiful thing to have this wilderness right here that is pretty healthy and thriving, and I want it to stay that way. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to change. Maybe get healthier in other places. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what's on my mind right now. Mm. Though women's right is very important.
Well, the idea of encapsulating that in a piece of art is pretty attractive to me. And I imagine to a lot of people too, not just me.
Yeah.
And obviously you're expressing that.
Yeah.
Caitlin Krabiel, thank you for joining Express Yourself today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Sue, same to you.
Oh, thank you very much for having us.
Really happy to see you guys happy with what you're doing in your art. That's so cool.
Thank you so much.
That's really great.